Today we're revisiting our friend Naaman. 2 Kings chapter 5. Now Naaman was commander of the army of the king of Aram. He was a great man in the sight of his master and highly regarded, because through him the Lord had given victory to Aram. He was a valiant soldier, but he had leprosy. Now bands from Aram had gone out and had taken captive a young girl from Israel, and she served Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "If only my master would see the prophet who is in Samaria, he would cure him of his leprosy." Naaman went to his master and told him what the girl from Israel had said. "By all means go," the king of Aram replied. "I will send a letter to the king of Israel." So Naaman left, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 sets of clothing. The letter that he took to the king of Israel read, "With this letter I am sending my servant Naaman to you so that you may cure him of his leprosy." As soon as the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his robes and said, "Am I God? Can I kill and bring back to life? Why does this fellow send someone to me to be cured of his leprosy? See how he is trying to pick a quarrel with me." When Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his robes, he sent him this message: "Why have you torn your robes? Make the man come to me, and he will know that there is a prophet in Israel." So Naaman went with his horses and chariots and stopped at the door of Elisha's house. Elisha sent a messenger to say to him, "Go, wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan, and your flesh will be restored, and you will be cleansed." But Naaman went away angry and said, "I thought that he would surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God, wave his hand over the spot, and cure me of my leprosy. Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than any of the waters of Israel? Couldn't I wash in them and be cleansed?" So he turned and went off in a rage. Naaman's servants went to him and said, "My father, if the prophet had told you to do some great thing, would you not have done it? How much more then when he tells you, 'Wash and be cleansed'?" So he went down and dipped himself in the Jordan 7 times, as the man of God had told him, and his flesh was restored and became clean like that of a young boy. Then Naaman and all his attendants went back to the man of God. He stood before him and said, "Now I know that there is no God in all the world except in Israel. Please accept now a gift from your servant." The prophet answered, "As surely as the Lord lives whom I serve, I will not accept a thing." And even though Naaman urged him, he refused. "If you will not," said Naaman, "please let me, your servant, be given as much earth as a pair of mules can carry. For your servant will never again make burnt offerings and sacrifices to any other god but the Lord. But may the Lord forgive your servant for this one thing. When my master enters the temple of Rimmon to bow down, and he is leaning on my arm, and I bow there also, when I bow down in the temple of Rimmon, may the Lord forgive your servant for this." "Go in peace," Elisha said. Naaman, you may have heard of him. A couple of weeks ago, we looked at Naaman the man from Mars who got to heaven, the man who was a great soldier, a real man, but who had a problem he couldn't beat, the man who found God. And we saw there the one great lesson, that the gospel of Jesus Christ is for men, for real men, for ordinary men, as well as for women, as well as for children, for it is a gospel for all of us. Today I want to look again at Naaman in the second of what may be a 3-sermon look at Naaman. This time, the title is not Naaman the man, but Naaman the outsider. The outsider who came in. For you see, one of the most remarkable things at the time in this story is that Naaman was not a Jew. He was not an Israelite. He was not from the people of God. You may recall that when Jesus preached his sermon in Nazareth that's recorded in Luke 4, he referred to Naaman and said, you know, God healed a man who was not an Israelite, an outsider. There were plenty of lepers in Israel at that time, but God healed Naaman the outsider. The people of Nazareth, by and large, were not very excited by what Jesus said. In fact, this reminder of Naaman the outsider led them to pick up stones to kill Jesus, to stone him to death. It was a touchy subject. And though it may not be a touchy subject in the same way as it was to those Jews, I believe it is a very real and relevant subject for us to look at today. Our God welcomes outsiders into his church. Carol McFarlane was one of my friends in the London City Mission, where I worked before I retired up here. Carol was a drug addict and a drug dealer. And as such, she was caught, arrested, and sent to prison. And she says herself that her attitude towards religion, towards God, was this. She had been brought up with sort of Christian background, and she knew about sin and so on. She was convinced that God wanted nothing to do with people like her. In her own inimitable way of putting it, she said, I felt that I was not fit for human consumption. And that the Bible and church and all that was not for people like me. But it was for good people, nice people, church-going people. In other words, Carol felt that she was an outsider and that there was no way in. God isn't interested in people like me, says the drug addict. Then I think of another lady who I knew. She'd actually been coming to the church in London where I was minister for a number of years. And one day, I forget what it was that I preached on, but it was something like the topic we're addressing this morning. It wasn't on this verse, but this passage. But I preached about Jesus Christ and the gospel, the grace of the gospel for the whole world. And this lady, who was a German, married to a Scotsman, she came up to me after the service and she said, for the first time, after what you've said today, I feel there's a place for me in this church. Now, don't misunderstand me. The people in the church were very welcoming, and they would never have dreamt of saying that she couldn't belong to the church. Far from it. But she herself felt, even though she'd attended church, that because she was German, she couldn't belong. That she was bound to be a permanent outsider. And then I also think of another London scene. I'm not sure what the Inverness equivalent is, but sometimes after church on a midweek evening after the prayer meeting, we'd go along the Strand. There was a particularly good pizza shop along the Strand, and a number of folks used to go along there and have supper together. On the way, we passed the Savoy Hotel, which is perhaps the most glitzy, certainly on the outside, of all the London hotels, with its distinctive green lettering and Art Nouveau, Art Deco, whatever it is, design, and all the big cars drawing in, and the people with their fur stoles on, and the doorman. And there in a doorway, just across from the entrance to the Savoy, lies a homeless man. And if you speak to a man like that, he would say, well, I'll never go in there. I'd never get in the door. It's no point even walking towards it. The doorman would be on the alert straight away. And in no uncertain terms, I'd be told to clear off. But they don't need to tell me to clear off because I know. They don't want people like me. I made a mess of my life. I'm not the sort of person that's accepted there. Outsiders. Do you feel like that? Do you know people who feel like that? People who might otherwise be here in church with you this morning, but they say, no point. No point me going. Maybe something's just brought you in as a visitor today, and it's a long time since you've been in a church. And you're here because, I don't know, we used to have people come to church in Ardnamurchan. Tough-looking Glasgow policemen who I don't think ever darkened the door in Glasgow, would take no threats from anybody. But when they went home to stay with mother for the weekend, there they were in church. Mother's a different kettle of fish. Maybe you're here today because mother's brought you. I don't know. But outsiders, feeling an outsider. Can you imagine what Naaman felt as he entered Israel? Wouldn't there be a thought in his mind, this is a waste of time. Why am I crossing the border into Israel? I'm not a Jew. I'm not an Israelite. I'm their enemy. What on earth am I expecting to get? What am I doing there? I'm an outsider. Well, this story of Naaman tells us that outsider or not, all are welcome to come into the Church of Jesus Christ. That's the great message of 2 Kings chapter 5, that this person from outside Israel, this enemy from outside Israel, this leader of the enemies who were outside Israel, found a welcome and a healing in the people of God. And the great lesson I want to teach you today and underline to you is that you, whoever you are, however much of an outsider you may feel yourself to be, you are welcome to come into Jesus's church. Let's just go through a little bit of the details of the story. There's a little girl who, of all people, has an excuse for not being welcoming to Naaman. She might say, hey, I'm a slave. This little girl who'd been carried away captive when the Syrian raiding parties had gone into Israel. There was constant sort of border war. We mustn't think of great armies and front lines. Maybe more like something like the situation in Iraq, where different bands of soldiers come in and capture a town for a day or two and then go off. And this girl has been carried away as a slave, a young girl. That raises all sorts of questions between the lines. Had she seen her parents killed? Had her parents also been taken into slavery? Very common in those days for the men to be killed and the women and the children to be taken into slavery. And yes, she's a household slave. She's a slave to Naaman's mistress. But she doesn't want to be there. She doesn't want to be a slave to a pagan Gentile. She didn't want to be dragged from her home, from the land of Israel. She didn't want to lose her parents and her family in whatever way they had been lost to her. And it would have been quite understandable if she'd thought in her mind, this Naaman, this leader of the people who have hurt me so badly, this leader of the people who have defied the living God by invading his land, these people, they deserve leprosy. They deserve everything they get. This is clearly a judgment of God on this wicked man, Naaman. I'm glad he's got leprosy. I wouldn't dream of suggesting to him that he goes to Israel. You'd have understood it if she'd said that. Indeed, you might expect her to say that. But the surprising thing in that case is that she didn't say that. She says to her mistress, "Oh, would that my master were in Israel. There's a man there who could cure him of his leprosy." So you see, let's sum this up, put the first word up. Nothing you are or have done is a barrier. Looking at Naaman, that poor suffering slave girl saw no reason why he shouldn't go to Israel. But he's an enemy of Israel. He's the general of the enemy's army. Never mind, she says, if he goes to Israel, there he can find help. And the message of the slave girl to you today is, whatever you are or whatever you have done is no barrier to you coming to the Church of Jesus Christ in exactly the same way that any others of us come. Nothing you are. You know, we in our land, we don't have that many divisions. Some countries, you know, if you tried to go to a temple or a mosque in India or in Afghanistan and were not from the right caste or the right tribe, somebody would stop you going. If, you weren't of the right social class, somebody might stop you going. But there is no reason in this girl's eyes why even this bitter, powerful enemy of her people should not come. That's wonderful. Nothing, the fact that Naaman was a Syrian, that he was a general, the fact that he had defeated Israel in battle, that was no barrier to her. He was in need. He was welcome in her eyes to come to the people of God, to the house of God, if you like, and to find help in his time of need. Now, it's true that the king of Israel didn't see it that way. We go on and read. It's probably a king called Jotham. And he was afraid when he got the king of Syria's message. He's trying to pick a quarrel with me. This man, this king, these enemies of mine. The first thing that came into his mind is that Naaman is one of his enemies. And he's obviously trying to get at him, and he doesn't want him there. But it's quite clear from the Bible that the king's reaction is not a good one, and it's not the right one. We must always remember, if you know your Bibles, you'll know this already, but this kingdom, the country of which this Jotham is king, is a breakaway state from the house of David. This is a king who is in rebellion against God himself. This is a man who, like his father, his forefather Ahab, is a worshipper of pagan gods and doesn't really believe in God. The little girl is a believer in the God of Israel, even though she's a slave. The king in Samaria is not to be trusted. 60 years ago, a ship called the Windrush arrived in London. It was an old troop transport liner, and it was full of people from Jamaica who had been invited and recruited to come and help run the buses and other vacant employments in London. Many of the men who came on the Windrush were Christians. On their first Sunday in London, many of them went to church. Some of them had a shocking welcome. One man said he went to a service, and at the church door afterwards, the vicar said to him, "Thank you for coming to our church today, but I think next week it will be better if you went somewhere else. We don't really have a place for people like you." He meant a black man in the church. The king of Israel would have been just like that. But the little girl would not have known what that minister was talking about. She's got the right view. Nothing you are Whatever your background, you know, you may be from the most dangerous and difficult tribe on earth. Another of our city missionaries was a guy called Patrick Kangi from New Guinea. He went to speak in a church in Northern Ireland. And an old lady, when she shook his hand, said with much trepidation, "Oh, are there still cannibals in New Guinea?" She wasn't sure of Patrick. And Patrick said to her, "No, ma'am, I ate the last one myself 10 years ago." So we all have fears. And, you know, when if you come as an outsider to a church, you can pick up those fears. You can sense them. We wish they weren't there in ourselves or in others. But what I'm really trying to say to you today is that if you come across those sort of fears and prejudices, please look beyond them. We're sorry for them. We're trying to tell us of them, and we'll do our best to root them out. Because that little girl is our model. Whatever people may have done to us, whatever you may have done to us, we want to welcome you. Do you remember Paul, Saul of Tarsus, when he was converted? He'd been responsible for a massive persecution of the church. He'd voted for people to be put to death for being Christians. And then suddenly the church in Jerusalem heard that Saul of Tarsus had arrived in Jerusalem and was claiming to be a Christian. You can understand it that a lot of the people said, "It's a trap. You know, if we invite him to our meeting, he'll be writing down our names and addresses and we'll be in trouble." But there was a man there called Barnabas. And Barnabas said, "No, God can do wonderful things. Don't be frightened of Saul of Tarsus. Don't let your fears and your natural pained reactions from all you've suffered under him, don't let that blind you to the greatness of God's grace. So whatever you've done, whoever you are, is not a barrier." Then also we see the next thing here on this, that you're more than welcome. Jesus's people will treat you with respect. Thinking here of the way that Elisha dealt with Naaman. We talked about this last time, that Naaman had two problems. He had his leprosy, but he also had a problem with his pride, his manly arrogance. And Elisha, God's servant, saw that actually the second problem was even greater than the first problem. The pride was worse than the leprosy. And he dealt with both. So he didn't come out. You know, Naaman was miffed. I thought this guy was come out and there'd be a trumpet blast and he would say something. "Oh, Naaman, great general, in the name of God, I put my hand on your suffering." And everybody would say, "Wow, look at that." Instead, a messenger came out and said, "Go and bathe in that little ditch down there. It's called the Jordan. Go and bathe in that 7 times. And Naaman's reaction is, "You've got to be kidding. Tell me something. Tell him, give me a task of Hercules and I'll do it." The man who climbed Everest to conquer his leprosy and so on. But wash in that river? No. But his servants convinced him. But you see, that to me, that may sound like a strange welcome from Elisha. To me, it's a welcome that treats Naaman with respect. God's servant sees what Naaman really needs. He doesn't sort of welcome him with cheap, sugary words. The Americans have a phrase about polishing the apple. He doesn't sort of come out and say, "Oh, Naaman, how pleased we are to see you. You know, we're really thrilled to have you here. What a wonderful man you are." So wonderful. "Please give a donation to our church before you leave." No. Elisha says, "We welcome this man as a needy soul. We welcome this man exactly as he is." That's what I mean by treating him with respect. Doesn't play let's pretend games. Doesn't try to butter up this big visitor. But sees him as a human being just like us. And you see, Christians should treat you with this respect because they themselves know how deep their need is. They know that they're not perfect. They know that they're not all-powerful. They know they haven't got magic answers, anything. They've got a God who is amazingly forgiving and amazingly patient and amazingly willing to help them. And so in the church, I hope you won't get flattery. I hope you won't get empty words of welcome. But you will get treated with real respect. Because, hey, look, we know life is tough. We know we all fail in so many ways. And you're no different from us. And we're no different from you. But we can point you to one who can help. And Jesus himself will welcome you. That's the third thing under here. That's why you're welcome to come into Jesus' church. Of course, the prophet there is a kind of forerunner of Jesus. Through his prophets, Jesus touches our lives. Through his word, he challenges us and is blunt with us and straight speaking. But also, of course, the waters of Jordan that wash away that leprosy. They are a pointer to Jesus Christ himself. In the most unlikely place, in a crucified, condemned criminal. That's what the Romans saw Jesus as. In the death, that horrible death on the cross, which looked far worse than the waters of Jordan looked to proud Naaman. In that shameful weakness of the cross, there is the power, there is the key to transform your life and mine. Jesus showed on the cross that it was for outsiders. One of the brigands, one of the thieves, one of the robbers who was crucified with him, cried out in a moment of insight, "Remember me when you come into your kingdom." And Jesus said to him straight away, "Today you'll be with me in paradise." So you see, whoever you are welcome to come to church. Whoever you are, you're welcome in the church of Jesus Christ. That's what the church is for. Many of the Israelites were slow to realize it, like those people in Nazareth. But what we were singing in Psalm 67 says it perfectly. The people of Israel were God's chosen people, not to exclude everybody else permanently, but to prepare them to be a blessing to everybody else. God chose Abraham and his family so that when Jesus came, a child of Abraham, there would be a people, the apostles and so on, whom Jesus would use to take salvation to all the outsiders in all the lands of the earth. Over every church, it's not a very trendy name for a church, but every church should be called the Whosoever Church. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him. That's whosoever is an old word that means no exemptions, no exceptions, no small print. You, whoever you are, whatever you've done, wherever you're from, whatever you know, whatever you don't know, whatever you feel, you are welcome to come to the Church of Jesus Christ. When John Bunyan was seeking a savior, struggling with his sense of sin, he came across that word, whosoever. And he says in his little autobiography, "My heart had a great wrestling with Satan over that word, whosoever." Satan kept saying, "No, no, no. Doesn't mean you." Like Carol McFarlane, Satan would say, "No, no, no. You're not fit for human consumption." Like the homeless man outside the Savoy, "No, no, no. Jesus doesn't mean he wants people like you to come." But John Bunyan says, "Whosoever won." Satan couldn't wrestle it out of it. Whosoever means you and me. And then lastly, let's press on to the last thing to say. This kind of presses it home. Not only are you welcome to come into Jesus Christ, but when you come into Jesus' church, you'll belong here and nowhere else. It's a fascinating thing. Naaman the outsider, the Syrian general, comes to Israel. He's healed, And what happens then? Well, there's this strange little conversation where Naaman asks for two bucketfuls, or as many bucketfuls of earth as a donkey can carry. Weird. And then he talks about having the king of Syria leaning on his arm as they go to the pagan temple. What's he on about here? Well, Naaman says these things because he's realized something very profound. He realized that having come to believe in God, the God of Israel, his home, in a real sense, is now in God's land. He belongs among God's people. In those days, the only place you could worship God was in Jerusalem. When Jesus came and died, that ended. And now, wherever we worship in spirit and truth, we can worship Jesus. But in those days, if you wanted to worship God, you had to go into the promised land and go to Jerusalem. Naaman couldn't do that as a general in the Syrian army. But he recognizes the reality. And he says, look, can I take some of the earth of Israel with me? I don't know what he was going to do. It sounds hilarious, doesn't it? You know, did he have it sort of in like a sand pit somewhere and go and stand in that? Maybe he did. Weird to us. But what he's saying is, I now belong to God's people. When I've been healed, I don't revert to being an outsider. Okay, Naaman, we've healed you. Off you go back to Syria and you're on your own. No, Naaman has found a new home. He has now become a citizen of God's people. He's a member of God's land. Paul spells this out in Ephesians 2, and the writer to Hebrews spells it out there. We're no longer strangers. We're no longer aliens. We are members. We are citizens of God's kingdom. We belong. Or to put it another way, we're prodigals who've come home. We've got a home that we belong to. Then Naaman says, one thing, when I go with the king to the temple, that's part of my duties, and I have to bow there in the temple of Rimmon, as everybody does, may I be forgiven that? He says, I won't mean it, but it's an inescapable part of my life. It's interesting that Naaman immediately senses that that's a problem point. You see, Naaman's now got a conscience. And he's beginning to, if he seriously believes that God, Jehovah, is the only true God, then it's not right, it's not proper for him to be worshipping Rimmon. He's been given a conscience. And God works through with him the challenges and problems of living as a follower of Jehovah in a mixed and often pagan world. I'm not drawing any sharp application. I'm not drawing any sharp parallel between the Temple of Rimmon and what we do in our lives. But the principle is that Naaman has God's word with him in his conscience through the prophet, through what is heard and seen around him. He's not alone. He belongs in God's land, hence his donkey load of earth. And he has God's word to guide his conscience and God's prophet to assure him, God's word to assure him of peace. Go in peace. Let's wrap it all up very quickly. Naaman was an outsider who came in. Let's come on to the last slide. Naaman was the outsider who came in. Where are you today? Maybe you're new or just looking. Maybe it's, as I said, your first time in church. I hope what I've said is relevant to you. If you've got questions, grab me after the service or talk to anybody around here, one of the elders on the door. Of course you've got questions. That's why it says on our notice board, if you noticed it outside, Smithton Church, a rest stop for the weary, a safe place for the unconvinced. I think Naaman was unconvinced when he came into Israel. He was giving it a try. And he found conviction as he found healing. We welcome you. We're pleased to have any question. You won't shock us. You won't trouble us. And at the end of next month, if you're a newcomer and you're wondering if this is the church that you should be your home, then we're having a special newcomers evening on October the 30th. And we'd love you to come along and hear a bit more about how you can be fully a part of the church. But you don't have to wait till then. There's community groups and midweek prayer meetings and so on. If you're seeking Jesus Christ, you've come to the right place. If you're wondering if there's a place for you here, then there is. We're not perfect, but God has open arms, and we do welcome you. But some of you have been coming a long time. Remember my friend Ursula I told you about? For the first time, she said, I felt there was a place for me in this church. Don't be content just to be on the edge, kind of one foot on the door. I knew a man who's a Muslim and began to think about Christianity. Understandably, perhaps on the first Sunday, he stood way across the road behind a tree, watching the people going into church. When they'd all gone in, he waited another 5 minutes, then he slipped in and he stood behind a pillar at the back. And when the service was obviously drawing to an end, he left before the end. He didn't want anybody to grab him. He didn't want, you know, he just wanted to go and see. He was looking in. That was understandable the first time. But don't just be like that metaphorically. You know, just coming in and sitting here for an hour on a Sunday morning, but sort of getting out as quickly as you can, because you don't really want to be challenged. You don't want to be drawn in. Why not? Why be an outsider even when you're in the church services? Is it that you don't know Jesus? Then you should be coming more to find out more about him. Or is there some other problem? Don't be content to be on the edge. Talk to us about it and make this church not your church any more than it's our church, but become a member of Jesus's church. And lastly, for those of you that are insiders, if you like, remember, it's not your church, it's not our church, it's Jesus's church. Somebody who joins from the most troubled background today is just as much a member of this church as I am, or as any of you are. Some of you can go back 30 years to when the church began. We're all, whether we've been here 30 years or 30 minutes, we're all here, like Naaman, only by the miraculous grace of Jesus Christ. Let's rejoice in that grace. Let's make ours an ever more welcoming church, that many, many Naamans may come in.